supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
It's primary election day in Pennsylvania with a host of important offices on the ballot, including governor, U.S. senator, as well as members of Congress and the state legislature. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Polls remain open until 8 this evening, and WHYY reporters have been checking in on polling places throughout the city and suburbs. Ahead this evening, I'll be joined by WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies to offer returns and analysis. He joins me now in the studio for an update on the day so far. And Dave, review what's at stake in the election and what we're hearing from voters.
Well, you know, Dave, there are an unusual number of contested primaries this year for important offices, particularly Congress, where, remember, three of our local representatives, Bob Brady, Pat Meehan, and Ryan Costello, decided not to seek re-election for a variety of reasons. There's also a bit of confusion about congressional districts, since they were all redrawn by the state Supreme Court as a result of that gerrymandering case. One person who was not confused today was voter Walter Williams of Darby Borough. He knows a new district was created for all of Delaware County. He's happy about it.
In the past, it seems like most of the attention is going to Philadelphia, and that Delaware County kind of got left by the wayside.
So that's the new 5th District, Dave, and there are 10 candidates running in that Democratic primary.
And Dave, of course, we're hearing that this may be the year of the woman in politics. Are we seeing that locally?
Absolutely, in a big way. In that 5th District race in Delaware County, there are 6 women on the Democratic ballot. The lone Republican is also a woman. I think it's very likely we're going to send at least 2 women from this region to Congress this year, which everyone says is overdue. The state has no women in its delegation. Pardon me. Currently, Barbara Katzman.
Let's hear from Barbara Katzman, a Democratic from Lower Marion, who was happy to pull the lever for women on her ballot.
Well, I think they need to be heard, and I think they politics would be totally different if there were more women involved.
Now, we're going to see competitive Democratic congressional primaries in Bucks, Montgomery, and Delaware counties, as well as 2 incumbents in Philadelphia. Dwight Evans and Brendan Boyle do have opponents, and with a lot happening in congressional races, what's going on with the governor and lieutenant governor?
Well, we're going to elect a governor this year, and there was an expensive and bruising battle among the Republican candidates, Pittsburgh attorney Laura Ellsworth, and 2 wealthy businessmen, Scott Wagner and Paul Mango. Here's Frederick Keffer, a Republican voter in Swarthmore, who says he chose Paul Mango as his GOP nominee for governor.
I was a little upset with the nastiness of the race, so I tended to go with the fellow that was less mean, you might say.
Kind of interesting he perceived Mango as less mean. He really began the negative ads and ran some very tough ones, Scott Wagner, but kind of looks tough. Whoever wins that race, Dave, takes on incumbent Democratic Governor Tom Wolf, who is unopposed on the Democratic side. And interestingly, if that is Scott Wagner, who is leading in the polls, that means we're going to have 2 rich guys from the same county, York County, on the ballot for governor. We also have a primary battle for lieutenant governor, 5 candidates, including incumbent Mike Stack on the Democratic side, 4 candidates on the Republican side, as well as some interesting state legislative races and 3 ballot questions in Philadelphia.
So much to keep track of, and we'll be bringing you updates and analysis throughout the evening. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies on Newsworks Tonight. Elsewhere in Pennsylvania government, medicine and politics are on a collision course. A bill making its way through the state legislature has split a community that's usually united by a common diagnosis, and it could be the next front in the abortion debate. Newsworks Tonight producer Shai Ben-Yaakov talked to families on both sides of the divide.
Hey, Lynn. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Lynn and Kevin Edis of Northwest Philadelphia had a difficult time starting a family.
I actually had 3 miscarriages before I became pregnant with Hazel, and
that's Hazel playing on the floor with her dad. Hazel is 20 months old. When I arrive, she smiles and waves at me, and while she can't yet walk, she squirms and rolls around the room with ease. Hazel also has Down syndrome. Her diagnosis was a shock for both parents.
I remember being at work, and Kevin and I at the time worked together, and the genetic counselor called me. And before I got off the phone, I remember being like, well, do you know, can you just tell me what the sex of the baby? Because, like, you know, it was like the weirdest thing. Like, I got this devastating diagnosis and I left the office and I went over to Kevin's desk and I was crying at that point.
Lynn was about 17 weeks pregnant, past the end of the first trimester. And amniocentesis to confirm the diagnosis took another couple weeks. In Pennsylvania, a pregnant woman has until 24 weeks to terminate a pregnancy. The clock was ticking.
They said to us, you know, you only have, it was like 2 or 3 weeks to make a decision. And it was hard. I mean, we, you know, having had 3 miscarriages and, you know, that whole idea of like what your family is going to be like, I think is just completely turned upside down.
Many parents in this situation say there are a million questions.
And you think to yourself, can I handle this?
Can I give this child what they need? Can I afford to quit my job or scale back? And who will take care of them when I'm gone?
And there was a lot of crying.
Lynn and Kevin decided to move forward with the pregnancy. A few months later, Hazel was born.
You know, I think all that worry we had beforehand went away the second she was born. And we fell in love with her right away, obviously.
All members voted. The clerk will record the vote. The yeas are 139, the nays are 56.
A bill in the legislature would make it so parents like Lynn and Kevin no longer have a choice. Last month, Pennsylvania lawmakers approved House Bill 2050. The bill would ban abortions in cases like Hazel's, where there's a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome. It has yet to be taken up in the Senate, and the governor has said he would veto it if it reached his desk. Similar laws have already passed in 4 other states. 2 in Ohio and Indiana have been suspended following court challenges from the ACLU. The bill is creating a divide within the Down syndrome community, normally supportive of one another and universally enthusiastic about their children and their abilities. Lynn and Kevin love their daughter, and they believe her life is worth living, but they don't support this bill.
I'm pro-choice. I believe that it's a woman's right to choose to keep a child or not. We made the right choice for us. I don't think that it's the government's right to tell somebody that they have to have a child because they have a certain diagnosis.
But advocates like Jeremy Samick frame the bill as anti-discrimination legislation. He's senior counsel with the Pro-Life Pennsylvania Family Institute. The group points to places like Iceland, where nearly all such pregnancies are terminated.
When they promote it, they talk about it being an eradication of Down syndrome as if they've eradicated a disease. But we would never say that we've eradicated homelessness by eradicating homeless people. Right, and I think that's essentially what they're doing here.
Samick speaks from a position at an organization opposed to abortion, but he also speaks as a parent of a child with Down syndrome.
For our daughter, we adopted her. She's doing wonderful. She has 4 older brothers. She engages everybody she meets, smiles at strangers, waves at strangers, talks to strangers, in her own chatty language.
At the heart of this debate is a question. Can the government stop parents from choosing which children to have? It's not an easy one to answer. Women in Pennsylvania can have an abortion for any reason or no reason at all. There are no restrictions, except one, says Temple Law professor Rachel Rebuchet.
There are 8 states, I think, that have sex-selective abortion bans.
Pennsylvania happens to be one of the 8 states where you can't terminate a pregnancy because of the sex of the baby. In 2 of those 8, Illinois and Indiana, the laws have been halted by federal judges. Rebuchet says these cases will likely wind their way through the courts, possibly as far as the Supreme Court.
I think this is a really tough issue. And I think that, you know, if you ask most people, should people be able to terminate pregnancies for any reason? And what about if the reasons, you know, eye color or sex, gender, you know, people start to have very complicated reactions.
When we look at the word eugenics itself, this fits squarely within that box.
Again, Jeremy Samick.
It's an effort to look at society and say, this is what we think the standard of perfection is when it comes to human beings. And those kind of things ought not happen.
All of the parents I spoke with agree. Their children have enriched their lives. But the most vociferous critics of this legislation argue it has nothing to do with Down syndrome.
I think it's reprehensible that they are using children with Down syndrome, you know, as a wedge in this issue.
That's Rabbi Mordechai Liebling, an activist supporting various liberal causes who also has a 27-year-old son with Down syndrome.
The world is definitely a far richer place to have people with Down syndrome in it. But that is not the reason to pass a law that denies women's right to choose.
Temple's Rachel Rebuchet agrees lawmakers pushing the bill seem to have an underlying motive.
It's clear that these laws are being passed by Republican legislators based on model legislation that Americans United for the Defense of Life publishes. They every year publish a state guide that gives people examples of laws they could pass in their state, and the laws are designed to really test the constitutional claims that attach to abortion.
And when the bill's sponsor, Pennsylvania House Speaker Mike Terzai, talked about the bill on the House floor, he talked about more than just Down syndrome.
In the end, abortion is a violent act, not against potential life, but against a living, growing human being, a life with potential.
If the bill does become law, pro-choice interest groups are already vowing to fight it in court. Shai Ben-Yakov, WHYY News.
Let's take a closer look at Pennsylvania House Bill 2050 with John Misek, opinions editor at Penn Live and The Patriot News. John, welcome back to Newsworks Tonight.
Dave, thanks for having me.
What, if anything, has transpired in the intervening weeks since the bill passed in the House?
Well, so far, nothing. This is the Down syndrome abortion bill we're talking about. It came out of the House a little bit earlier this year. Now sitting over in the Republican-controlled state Senate, we're on a primary break at the moment. The two chambers coming back to work next week, May 22nd, and we'll see what happens from there.
Were there any hearings in advance of the House vote, and are any scheduled around this stage of it?
Not a one in the House, and State Representative Kathy Rapp of Crawford County, the chairwoman of the House Health Committee, had told me she'd actually planned it that way. She said she didn't feel a need to bring any experts in to testify in on this very sensitive bill. And the bill is now going to the Senate Judiciary Committee. And the last time I checked in with Senator Stuart Greenlee's office, the chairman, they had not planned anything either.
Should it get to Governor Wolf's desk, is there any ambiguity about whether he'll sign it?
No, this one's heading for a straight gubernatorial veto. The governor's office has been pretty clear about that. Their position on these bills is that this is the province of a woman and her physician, and that the legislature should not put itself in the middle of it.
You wrote on this topic earlier and called this in part an exercise in election year politics. Explain.
Well, I mean, you know, Republicans are looking to hold on to their majorities in the state House and in the state Senate. There's a chance for some Democratic pickups in the state House, and you can bet that they'll be out there campaigning on this. We're also in the midst of a hotly contested gubernatorial election between Governor Tom Wolf, a Democrat, and whoever emerges from the Republican gubernatorial primary. And you can bet that that will be an issue as well. The Governor Wolf will put himself out there as sort of a defender of women's reproductive rights and say that his Republican rival, whoever that is, will do what they can to erode support for that.
Are there any accommodations in this bill to enable parents who have a Down syndrome child?
You mean in terms of support or,
yes,
or that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
No, there aren't. That's another of the great ironies here. Republicans are banning this, are banning Down syndrome abortions, but provide no support services for parents on the back end who have Down syndrome babies.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Dave.
John Misek, opinions editor at Penn Live and The Patriot News. In Delaware, the State Department of Justice says the personal information of more than 200,000 residents was compromised as part of the recently disclosed Facebook data breach. WHYY's Shirley Min spoke with Delaware Attorney General Matt Den about steps to protect your privacy on social media.
Delaware Attorney General Matt Den says 900 Facebook users in Delaware installed an app that allowed political consulting firm Cambridge Analytica to harvest not only their personal data, but also data from their friends without their knowledge or permission.
Through that app, over 200,000 people in Delaware alone, just by virtue of being friends with those 900, may have had their personal data exposed. There's a huge multiplier effect when you're talking about social media.
Den is among 41 attorneys general who signed a March letter to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. It asks whether Facebook's privacy terms were clear or buried in boilerplate, and what safeguards were in place to ensure third-party developers were not misusing users' data.
This obviously raises much broader questions, though, beyond compliance with state law, just about how we want to operate on social media as a country and to what degree we want to allow people's personal information to potentially be exposed in this way.
Short of deleting your Facebook account, you can take some simple steps to better protect personal information. It's recommended you delete any unnecessary apps on your Facebook page. And don't use Facebook or other social media sites to sign in to other websites. Personal info of up to 87 million Facebook users worldwide may have been improperly shared with Cambridge Analytica and other third parties. From the Delaware desk, Shirley Min, WHYY News.
Navigating the dynamics of your workplace can be tricky, especially if you're a bit different than your coworkers. That's what Marjorie Winther discovered at her former job. She shared her story of trying to find her place at a first-person arts story slam for WHYY's Common Space.
So I read, this is a fact, that on any given day, 14% of American workers want to punch someone. Doesn't that seem low? It's like, what are the other 86%? They're just like egging them on, you know, come on. Work is hard. It's not the work, it's fitting in. Is that not true? I used to work for a place, and I didn't really understand the culture. Like, my boss spoke entirely in sports metaphors. He'd be like, we got to, like, hit a home run. We got to carry the ball down the field. And I don't follow sports, so I would answer with literary allusions. You know, like, I'm on it. Like, Troilus was on Cressida. I didn't fit in. I didn't really like the people that much, and they didn't like me. But to his credit, my boss wanted to help me fit in. And he sent me to an image consultant where I learned a lot of things like curly hair is not serious. Isn't that borderline racist? Like, it really, you know, it's like you have to have straight hair, don't wear dangly earrings, they're slutty. And my clothes weren't right. Like, I wear jewel tones, I'm Semitic, you know, it looks good. No, wear beige. Who looks good in beige? You know, people with a house in Kennebunkport. I mean, it's just... It was bad, but the worst thing is they sent me the presentation skills training, and I need both hands, and they told me, keep your gestures in the gesture box. Like, shoulder to whatever. You're like, keep it like, because if you do this, like, you look out of control. Like, do you have anyone ethnic working here at all? You know, it's like, keep your gesture. So I'm like, okay, I need this job. I have to fit in. So it was my turn to do my presentation, and I was like, our new product is going to be huge. We're going to push the needle here to here. It's aggressive. So, I mean, we didn't get along, but it wasn't like a crisis until this particular company had two business units. They had software developers, and they had a call center. And the software developers, it was before they discovered India, so they were all like, they were all white men making six-figure salaries, come to work in late-model SUVs. And the call center were all African-American women making $9 an hour, coming to work on the 125 bus. And then the company decided to lay off. They were going to spin off the call center, essentially lay off all the black people. So I went to see my boss, who was the vice president, and I was like, Bill, can I give you some feedback? And you just laid off all the black people. Like, I think that's illegal. And he was like, well, I don't see color. You know this guy, okay. He's like, you know, I don't care if people are blue, yellow, or green. Like, we're living in some sort of Smurfy paradise with no history of discrimination. You know, he goes, I just really hire people I'm comfortable with. I'm like, Bill, your comfort zone would fit in the gesture box. But you don't change people by yelling at them. So I said, look, I understand where you're coming from. It's hard to find women and minorities who look and act just like white men. And 2 days later, I was laid off. First they come for the blacks, then the Jews. It's an age-old story. But I wasn't sorry to go because I have a job now where I teach unconscious bias. So thank you for letting me share my story.
That's Marjorie Winther, recorded at a first-person art story slam for WHYY's Common Space. It's a collaboration between First Person Arts and WHYY. It can be heard on the last Sunday of each month on WHYY-FM and via podcast. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Vinyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Marketplace is next. We encourage you to stay with WHYY throughout the evening as we bring you updates on the Pennsylvania primary. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller. NewsWorks Tonight.